Hi, culties, and welcome to Hauntings, Murders, and Mimosas. This is Jamie,
Megan,
and Morgan,
and we are glad that you are here with us today. So, ladies, this week is the week for us to go to the Center Hill Mansion for the ghost investigation. Morgan, are you ready yet?
I don't think so.
Well, you gonna get ready?
Probably not.
You've had a couple weeks to mentally prepare.
Have I thought about this? No.
Well, that's...
I have completely forgotten about it, and now that it's 4 days away.
You got 4 days to prepare now.
That's a Morgan problem.
I don't need preparation to run.
I'm prepared.
Well, we are planning on recording what we can in there, and if we hear anything or see anything, then we will do a special episode with just the results from that. And if we don't find anything or catch anything, then it'll just be a whole lot of Morgan screaming.
It wasn't screaming. Somebody scared me, okay?
Yeah.
I had to be the one by the door, and they knocked really loud right next to my ear while we were staring at a mirror that people say they see things in, and I was looking for somebody, and somebody was right next to me. Okay?
So, yeah, you got exactly what they said that you would get.
Just not in the mirror. Oh.
Well, I'm excited about it. I hope we catch something. I hope we hear something.
And I do too. I feel like I'm going to be disappointed if we don't.
I know. And if we do hear something or see something, I hope we're able to catch it. At the Center Hill Mansion, we are supposedly going to hear like footsteps and horses coming up.
I feel like there's going to be a whole lot of,
what was that? Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Is that something moving?
Paranoid talking.
Well, she said there's a time where it all starts, and that time comes, I'm going to be like, that wasn't anybody else's footsteps. That was a ghost.
Yeah.
We're going to get Morgan all riled up anyway.
If I wasn't pregnant, I would take the tiniest piece of a mushroom and see how that fared. I don't think I would ever do a trip like that and go on a ghost hunt.
I think Megan and I need to take one.
Yeah, she's going to pass out.
Yeah, I'm this good. Is true.
And you're supposed to be the leader. You're supposed to be coherent.
And somebody's got to drive us home. So.
Yeah, I'll drive us home. Let's just go past the obstacles that I see on the
Well, I hope it's fun. And I hope that we can really get something to share with everybody. And if not that, then we have other things around here that we can go and do and see what we can find.
Did you ever figure out if we're allowed to record?
It never said that we couldn't. And it's supposed to be like a ghost investigation or ghost hunt kind of thing. So I wouldn't think that it'd be a problem. And it's not like we're coming in with like,
a whole recording studio.
Right. We're not coming in with an entourage.
Yeah.
We're going with our microphones and our phones, and that's it.
I hope they don't say anything.
Well, if they do, then they'll have to catch one of us.
I think they'd catch all of us.
All right, Megan, it's going to be up to you.
Why me?
Well, because she's pregnant and we don't want her running downstairs. I can't go up and down the stairs, let alone run them.
I can't run them either.
That's when you're going to have to go.
I wouldn't run because you know what? I'd hand them the phone because if I run somewhere that I don't know where I'm going and end up seeing something or hearing something, I'm going to cry.
We'll just put Megan on her stomach and slide her down the rail on the stairs.
I'll ride the booty.
That hurt my boobies.
Well, that's what you've got big boobies for.
They get stuck.
They get squashed.
They wouldn't get stuck. It'd make you go, just slide.
No, they'd get stuck underneath me and just pull me down.
Okay, well, then you gotta go grab them and pull them up as you go down.
I don't like being voted for this.
Okay, fine, it'll be me. I'll just pretend like I fall down the stairs and take my phone with me. And then when y'all come down and go, gee, Mom, are you okay? I'll pass you the evidence going, run.
As you're sitting there with a broken leg.
I'll take one for the team.
pretend to fall down the steps and actually fall.
Yeah. Well, it probably wouldn't be me pretending. I'm sure I would just do it.
It's not funny, but all you'd hear is her going, oh no, shit, shit.
That would be my karma, wouldn't it? This is what it says about the event. It says that ever since the end of the Civil War, on January 24th at 7:20 in the evening, there's a ghostly visit of cavalrymen who come up to the front of Center Hill and leave their horses. They come in the front door, climb the steps to the general's office, bang around for about 20 minutes, and then leave at 7:40.
What if they fake it?
Then I'm going to be really disappointed.
Because I feel like there's never been, I mean, not that they will fake it or they would, but I'm just saying there's never been something that I've heard of that has a set.
Yeah, I know. That to me is kind of odd that it's the exact same time every year. But
and
they also
only on that day.
And only on that day. But they also say that there will be a ghost hunting group there with recordings of previous years to listen to as well. Do you want to go ahead and get into the stories?
No.
Okay, fine. You want to just sit here and talk? That's fine, too.
Yeah, we can get into the stories.
All right. So, raise your hand if you've ever heard of The Shining.
Of course.
Okay.
So she said raise your fucking hand.
Can they see that, Megan? Can they see that?
They are assuming that you are.
Can they see that?
Yes.
No!
Yes.
We're going to put a video out.
I'm going to bust your ass, Megan.
And this is why we never get anything accomplished. Okay, so today we're going to talk about the Stanley Hotel. And this is the hotel that inspired Stephen King to write the movie.
Red Rum.
Red Rum.
Red Rum.
Write the movie The Shining. And in the movie, it was called the Overlook Hotel, but it was actually based on his stay at the Stanley.
Oh.
What?
Red Rum. It's murder.
Red Rum.
It's murder.
That was part of the movie. They figured that out in the movie.
I don't think I've seen the whole movie.
Okay, well, we need to fix that. That's a good movie. So, the Stanley Hotel is a really large, like, lodge-style hotel that's in the mountain town of Estes Park. And it was actually built by an inventor named Freeland Oscar Stanley. He developed the Stanley cars, motor cars. You know, there was Ford, and there was Stanley. And he found out that he had tuberculosis, so he wanted to go to Estes Park in the valley and thinking that it would get his health back. And it actually did help him. He went there. He was so ill that he was convinced that he was going to die, but he wanted to die in a pretty place. So, but after one summer, his health was restored, and he said it had to do with the fresh air and the sunshine that he got up there. But he and his wife both moved up there, and her name was Flora.
Nice.
And they had made plans to build a large hotel that would be like the Edwardian opulence and grandeur of the hotels in the East Coast, but in a more rustic Western setting. So they actually did build their hotel, of course, and it opened in 1909. When the hotel opened in 1909, all of the guests were just really flabbergasted by the opulence of this place out in the middle of nowhere, you know, in the West. It had electricity, telephones, modern bathrooms, a maid, cooking staff in professional uniforms. And it was really just this posh place for everyone that was not, you know, on the East Coast that traveled out to the West Coast to come and stay. And some of their famous guests was Teddy Roosevelt, the Emperor of Japan. They had presidents that would stay there. And do you remember me telling you about Molly Brown from the Titanic, the unsinkable mm-hmm. Molly Brown? She actually stayed there too.
Oh.
So it was a place that really drew in, you know, the high caliber guests that they wanted to have out there. But by the 1970s, the hotel was in disrepair because it had been neglected and they hadn't had, you know, many people invest in it. And it could have been demolished if it hadn't just been like this really strange, bizarre string of occurrences that happened. And what happened was Stephen King and his wife, they were living in Boulder, Colorado. And one weekend, he and his wife, Tabitha, decided to drive up to Estes Park for a weekend and just stay at the Stanley Hotel. So it was the last day of the season. Everybody was leaving. Because of the weather up there, that it really is inaccessible for like 5 months out of the year because of snow and everything. So the hotel will close and shut down for about 5 months, and everybody who works there will leave because if you don't, you're stuck for 5 months by yourself. But it was the last day of the season and everybody was leaving. Nobody was coming in, and he just went in and asked if they could check in. They checked them in and put them in room 217, and they were the only guests in the hotel that night. So they had the entire hotel.
This was Stephen King, like the author?
Yeah. So they had the whole hotel just to walk around and explore and everything. And King said that he had a lucid nightmare. In the nightmare, there was a coiled fire hose that was coming to life and chasing his son down the halls of the hotel. And after he woke in a panic, he said he went and stood out by the window, lit a cigarette, and by the time he finished the cigarette and went back to bed, he had the rough outline of The Shining formed in his head. The Stanley's connection to King and that one night and that nightmare that he had, it influenced the movie The Shining.
So this isn't, The Shining wasn't based on like a true story.
No, it was not based on a true story, but there were things that happened in The Stanley that he kind of roundabout put into The Shining.
So The Stanley is not haunted.
Oh, no. The Stanley is very, very haunted.
Okay.
It's very haunted.
I was about to say, and that's what
he... That's what he put into the Shining was all, you know, the fact that he was staying in this one place that was extremely haunted.
So he knew it was haunted going in?
Mm-hmm.
And he assumed the dream was from, like, a ghost?
Yeah. Something that was influenced by some of the ghosts.
A coiled fire hose? Uh-huh. Like a water hose off a fire truck?
Well, in older hotels, especially, you know, the ones that were built like in the 1900s, they would have water that could be hooked in through the hotel or pulled up through the hotel. And they would have, and I know you've seen them, like the things on the wall. The hoses in there.
Uh-huh. It would just come out and just chase the sun.
Yes, yes.
It's such a funky dream.
I know.
And something, it's such a funny dream to wake up and be scared of, too.
I know.
Like, if it was a giant snake, fine. But it's a water hose.
It sounds like one of Charlie's dreams.
I know. Did Megan tell you the other one she told her the other day about the candy? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, she told me about that one. She has some weird dreams.
The candy ate the world.
I don't know how to handle that stuff.
I'd just be like, oh, I'm sorry. Maybe you shouldn't eat candy anymore.
My tism shines through with that stuff. I'm like, candy? And she was like, yeah. I was like,
okay.
Oh. Lay down.
It's like, it's just candy.
Megan!
Just go back to sleep. Was it a spree or was it what? A lemon head or what?
Lay down. Oh my God.
I don't know how to respond to those things.
Yeah, we see that.
Who knew being a parent with autism would be very difficult?
Because you're parenting an autistic child.
Exactly. When you have it to deal with yourself and then you're parenting a child that has it too, just wait till you have a grandchild that has it.
Megan tried to do this, like, ADHD test with me. Bro, I was getting so pissed off. She kept saying, like, such random stuff that, like, I didn't know what she was doing. And she just kept saying it. I was like, what do you want? She's like, I was trying to do an ADHD test. And I didn't know what she was doing. She did the ba-da-ba-ba-ba, and or one of them, and I did it back. The first time. But then she kept saying, like, random stuff that I did not know what she was doing.
Uh-huh.
And she was just getting, like, louder and kept staring at me. And I was like,
Okay, so it says that if you live in a home that has like neurodivergent people, there's an echolalia response. So like if I were to be like ba da ba ba ba,
I'm loving it.
See, someone has to say it. Uh-huh. Someone has to finish it. So I was just trying to see.
But you weren't saying it in the right tune. I know. I was so confused.
I know. I was trying to think of the tone so bad. So I just kept saying things.
It literally just sounded like her saying beep, boop, boop, beep, beep, boop. I was like, what are you doing?
I wouldn't have gotten that. I was so excited for the idea of it to test it out that I like just forgot everything that we would have like responded to. And yeah.
Tony, she should try it with Tyler because he will do that. Or give me a list and I'll do it.
See, like if I sit there and try to do that and no one responds, then I have to finish it. Like I can't not finish.
You can't leave it.
No, not at all. Like even in my head, I can't. It has to be finished.
That's OCD too. You're welcome. I gave you all sorts of good stuff.
It gives me so much anxiety if it's not finished.
Yeah, that's OCD.
Why did you give me everything?
Well, I tried to share it with both of you.
I got
you
the got autism. The you also got the ass. I didn't get that.
And the tits.
Yeah, I didn't get either of those.
I got the autism. I got it, the ADHD. I got the anxiety. I got the OCD.
I have OCD tendencies. I don't think I have OCD. Like, I count for everything. Like, stairs that I go up or when I'm filling up my water cup or if I'm, like, typing things out, I'll count it. But, like, that's about it.
Everything's got to be an even number. Like, I will fuss at Jacob if he turns the volume up to an odd number.
I like mine to be at fives.
I don't like fives. I like even numbers.
I like fives.
I like twos.
I like fives. It makes me happy when I'm on, like, a 30 or a 40.
See, I'm okay with that. That's an even number. But if you're on, like, 15, I'm like, no. I just got to go up one or go down one.
But I like 15.
But I don't like 15.
Well, it depends on who has the remote control.
Anyways.
Depends on whose ADHD and OCD is kicking in that day.
So most of the time, I'll just try not to look at it so it doesn't bother me.
So, as I said, Stephen King and his wife stayed in room 217. But that's not the only occurrence. His dream is not the only occurrence that has happened in room 217.
Did they request to stay in this haunted room?
I don't know if they requested to stay in that room or whether they were just...
All rooms are haunted.
Yeah. All of them are haunted. Or they said, Stephen King, we got the room for you. I never read that they requested, so I'm not sure. But in 1911, there was a flood in the hotel. And it was only 2 years old at the time because they had just opened in 1909. But the flood took the power out for the first time. So Stanley decided what he would do would be to install a gas lantern in each room to make sure that the guests had light in case there was another power outage of electricity. Well, apparently in the room 217, there had been a buildup of gas and nobody knew about it. So the head chambermaid, Elizabeth Wilson, she walked into the room with a lit candle and set off this massive explosion. It was a miracle she survived, but she was launched from the room's entrance to the dining hall located on the first floor. This was the second floor.
Wait, she like launched off a balcony?
Yeah, it just like shot her out. It said that an estimated 10% of the hotel wasn't as lucky, and one person actually reported seeing a bathtub fly up in the air during the blast. So, I mean, it was a bad explosion.
Damn.
She was actually in a coma for a while, but when she woke up and recovered and everything, she went back to work at the Stanley. And that was in 1913, and she stayed employed there until she left in 1950. But it doesn't really end there. They say that her spirit still inhabits that room 217. And I don't know if you remember anything in the movie, but it was room 237 in the movie. But there was a woman that haunted that room.
I don't remember that part. I remember the little girls, the whole Red Rum thing, and like him going through the door. That's basically all I remember.
Well, there was a woman that was in this room that basically seduced him.
Seducted
him. I knew it was right when I said it, Megan. Okay. She seduced him. And she, okay, well, she ended up not being very much of a seductress. But anyway, he saw her that way to begin with. But this is not, this doesn't follow along with the movie. This was where the chambermaid kind of haunts that room now. I don't know whether she's going back to the scene of what, you know, nearly killed her. They also say that when you have trauma like that, that there are ties to wherever you've had that trauma. Like, for instance, you were in a car accident on a certain ramp.
She also seemed to love the hotel.
She did. I mean, she must have if she went back and stayed for another 40 years. But, you know, like, if you have an accident on a certain ramp, then every time you go by that ramp, you might have, like, a little PTSD or be drawn to it or whatever. So maybe she was just drawn to that room instinctually. But there have been reports of guests still seeing her in there. But she's really more helpful than scary. Like, she'll come in and tidy up the room or fold her clothes or make sure the suitcases are organized. She's still doing her job. And one couple that stayed there said that they were lying in bed and she came in and made up the bed around them. Like, tucked them in.
Wait, is this hotel still open?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it is. And we will be going one day.
Where was it?
It's in Colorado.
I want to go to Colorado.
I do too. We will be staying. And I know why you want to go to Colorado, but we'll be staying at the Stanley when we do. But there is one thing. She does not like unmarried couples. So if an unmarried couple stays in room 217, she's actually kind of gotten in bed with them, like, in between them.
She said, leave room for Jesus.
That's right. And Jesus happens to be me today. Stanley died in 1940 at the age of 91, but people still say that they feel him all around the hotel too, mainly at the bar and the billiard room. And his wife, Flora, also died in the hotel, kind of like in the lobby. And they have seen her and hear her playing the piano. She was a very accomplished pianist, and she will go over there and just play the piano randomly.
It's nice.
Yeah. And this hotel is so famous for its ghosts and everything that they actually have set up tours for you to do haunted tours. So when you come in, you know, you can go to a tour guide and do a haunted tour every day, any day. And some of the tour guides believe that there is a child that's there that has autism, because they will hear the child laugh and the child repeats what they're doing. Like, he or she will play with the guest's hair or, like, tug on their clothes or something like that.
Why do they think he's got autism? Because he's repetitive.
Yeah. There is a tour supervisor at the Stanley Hotel by the name of Rachel Thomas, and she claims that she was made very, very ill while she worked at the hotel. And this place has also been featured in Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures and, well, just about any ghost show that's ever been on. That they like,
well,
to talk
Stephen
about the
King
Stanley.
Covered it.
Yeah.
It's famous.
There are also a lot of other creepy locations at this hotel. One of them includes a pet cemetery where some of the... Yeah, I know. Stephen King wrote Pet Cemetery too. I mean, I wonder how many inspirations he got from this one hotel. But some of the owners' pets have been laid to rest there. One of them was Cassie, and she was a friendly golden retriever, and she said to still deliver papers and scratch at doors to be let in. plus, they have a huge cave system that's located under the hotel. Okay.
For
why
what?
Would, cave system.
For what?
Well,
for what?
Okay, you know, actually, why would you need caves under a hotel?
Like, other than, like, escaping and stuff.
Well, back in those days, in the early 1900s, when the hotel was open, it was very unprofessional for staff to be seen. So the employees would use the underground caves to go between the rooms and the bar and the laundry facilities and restaurants.
I wouldn't go down there.
And it says that there is a pastry chef that likes to haunt the caves. And when he's around, they smell like the scent of baked goods. I could deal with him. He's not scary at all. Croissants.
Croissant.
According to some of the people, though, room 401 is the creepiest room in the hotel. And it's because they feel like it's haunted by an unfriendly male ghost. Women have been inappropriately touched while in there. And one man said that he was standing in the bathroom and he saw his wedding ring move from the counter and fall down the drain of the sink in the bathroom. He stood there and watched it happen.
No.
He was trying to get rid of that man so he could get that woman. Also down the hall in room 407, multiple guests have reported that they have been tucked in by an invisible force and that they have felt people sit on the foot of the bed and see an indention in the covers. But when they turn the light on,
that
nothing.
That has always been a fear. Ever since it was one of those like a haunting shows that you watched. And it was, I think it was like a dog or something. Like a hellhound that they said, but like it made indentions walking towards the person. I have never forgotten that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to see that. I don't think that's something I want to see. Nah, I don't need to see that. And
that's why I burrito myself in bed.
Yeah. But what if they crawl under there with you?
They can't. I got it so tucked in tightly. Nothing is coming in there.
I've always had a fear of like somebody sitting on my bed and feeling it. And I have felt something like that before. Thought I'd lost my mind, turn on all the lights, see nothing. I didn't see any indentions or anything like that, but then turned the lights off and felt it again. Like, nope, not sleeping tonight.
It wasn't on my bed, but I saw somebody sitting on Megan's bed in Peru.
Ugh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, but I told you the next day and you were like, oh.
Yeah, Megan was like, well, it's already over with now. Plus, I think that we were so exhausted because that was after we went to Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm. And we all came back to the hotel and slept with our clothes and shoes on.
Oh, I passed out.
That was a long day.
That's why I didn't wake up.
We laid on that bed. I didn't even take my shoes off. I don't know if y'all did or not, but I laid on that bed, slept hard, woke up. We left the next morning, but it was a beautiful and magical thing to do. And I really hope that we get a chance to do it again. But that was a hard day.
Yeah.
That was a lot of climbing.
I think the worst part for me was that bus ride up there. Oh, that was terrifying.
That was scary. That was horrible.
All you saw was hill, cliff.
Yeah.
Hill, cliff.
And it was a two-way.
Yeah.
And it was really just a one-way road. But I don't know how we survived that. I really don't.
I don't know how they do that every day.
I could not do that job. There's just no way.
I mean, considering... This is like really in depth, but considering how much that road is used, you'd feel like the edges of it would start breaking away at some point.
I know.
I don't like that.
I don't understand either. I do understand why they can't go in and just sandblast some more off and make it wider because they don't know if they're going to
make the whole thing fall.
Make the whole thing fall and make everything structurally, you know, unsafe. Plus, they wouldn't be able to have anybody go up to Machu Picchu. That's the only way to go unless you hike.
Yeah.
And there's no way I could have hiked up there. But anyway, back to the Stanley. One more room they say is very haunted, and it's room 428. There seems to be a lot on the fourth floor. They say that that room is haunted by a cowboy that will just come in and pull a Megan, like come in and stand over you while you're sleeping. You like lean over you.
Well, then Megan gets to stay in that room.
We'd be friends.
I'll stay in the room with the maid. We'll be friends.
Yeah, she's not a problem. They do say that also in that room that they hear like sounds up above it, like furniture being moved and footsteps, but there is nothing above that room.
It's not another room?
It's not another room. It's not an attic space. There's nothing above it.
It's just the roof?
Yeah, it's just the roof. So that room goes like into the roof.
Huh. It's Santa.
It's Santa every single day?
Maybe that's where he stops.
And he moves furniture.
Yeah, maybe he's like going out to find inspiration for new toys, come back, take a break.
It's like, I'm just going to go sit on my roof.
Maybe that's his halfway mark from somewhere to the North Pole.
Okay, I'll buy it. I mean, it's just as plausible as anything else, I guess.
Or it's reindeer storage.
Reindeer storage.
Is that where Rudolph lives? But anyway, that's the Stanley Hotel. And that's why people go there is because it's pretty and haunted. And they want
reindeer.
They have reindeer on the roof over 428.
That was a good story.
Yeah. Thank you.
I like learning more about that hotel because I've seen parts of the movie, but mm-hmm.
I always thought it was kind of interesting. I just don't know why I never finished the movie.
Well, we are definitely, it's on my bucket list for us to go. So what's your story about, Morgan?
Have you guys ever heard of Delimar Vera?
No.
Very interesting story. So she was born December 5th, 1997 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and she was born to Luz Cuevas and Pedro Vera and their two sons. 10 days after she was born, Pedro had a distant cousin's wife over and he was fixing her brakes out in the driveway. He was out there for a little while, and so she decided to go inside with Luz, and she and Luz had never really like formally met. I think they had met like maybe one other time, but they had never really had conversation or anything like that. So it was said that the conversation was very awkward and they didn't really have much to talk about. Luz told Carolyn that she just had a baby, and Carolyn had told her that she was also a new mom and everything. And they were just talking for a little while Luz was trying to do some chores around the house. And a little before 7 p.m. that night, there was a loud noise that came from the second floor. And Luz said it was like a small explosion. They kind of were like stunned for a second, and then they saw smoke starting to come down the stairwell. Immediately, Luz sent the boys out with Carolyn to go tell Pedro what was going on. And Luz ran upstairs because Delimar was sleeping in her bedroom, in her crib. And when she went up there, that's when she found out that the fire had started in Delimar's room. So she tried to like cover her face, but there was so much smoke and so much fire that she couldn't get to her. So she ran out of the house and ran into the middle of the street and started yelling for somebody to come help. And her neighbor's son came out and tried to go in there too, but he also couldn't get to her because there was just so much smoke and fire surrounding everything.
Oh my God.
The firefighters eventually did come, and the fire was put out within 15 minutes. So it was a 15-minute fire. And from it being started in Delimar's room, her room was destroyed. Like, so the houses that they lived in were townhomes, mm-hmm. like brick townhomes, and they were all attached. And Delimar's room was on the second floor in the very front of the house. And you, if you look up like pictures and stuff, the whole like top of their house was just black. Where the window was just this giant hole that like you could just see full in her room. There was nothing left.
Oh my God.
So they put out the fire, and the firefighters brought out this bundle and took it to the ambulance, and then they had to inform Luz and Pedro that Delimar didn't make it. As soon as they told them that, Luz was immediately like, that's impossible, because she wasn't in the crib. She said, when I went up there, there was nobody in the crib. So she was like, I had the window open and somebody stole my baby. So she was telling them that like, she didn't see the baby. There was no possible way that she had died in the fire, that somebody had taken her baby and somehow gotten from the second floor and jumped out the window with the baby. And everybody was just like, she's in shock.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were like, she's not accepting of it. Of course, she just got the news that her baby died. She wasn't gonna accept it, but they were just like, she needs to be treated. She got burns all over her, on her face and her arms and everything. So she had to be taken to the hospital and treated for that. So yeah, she was brought to the hospital and treated. And when the house was investigated, they did find ashes where the crib was.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that by the looks of them, that was human remains, and they were very sure about it being human remains. And they also said that that was probably the closest thing in the room that they were going to find as human remains. They also figured out where the fire had started. It was from a heat lamp that she had on the baby that was attached to an extension cord running across the room, and somehow the extension cord just, I guess, combusted.
Why would you need a heat lamp on a baby? I mean, that's like McDonald's putting your Big Mac on.
It was one of like the small floor ones. She just had it like on the baby. It was December, and like she said, she had the window open, so she was just kind of, I guess, trying to keep it like an even mm-hmm. temperature. But they found that information out, and she was very upset because they were basically telling her that she started the fire mm-hmm. and that she killed her baby. So she was very upset about that, and she was still telling them, like, I know she wasn't in there. There's no way that she was in there because I saw the crib,
mm-hmm.
and somebody had stolen my baby. So she continued to ask the police and ask people to help her, like, do a real search for Delimar,
mm-hmm.
but nobody listened to her because The firefighters had found ashes, and they said that they were human remains. So they, with that, there was no reason to go out and do a search. Again, she had been trying to tell everybody for years and years and years, and she tried the cops, she tried her family, she talked to her husband about it. But this really got to her and Pedro's marriage. She would always talk about, like, her being abducted and that somebody had taken her and that she didn't die. Pedro just wanted to accept the fact that he lost his daughter and move on with their lives. This really put a strain on their marriage. And I'm not exactly sure, like, the details of, like, when they separated, but there is a movie that I watched that in the movie, he left, and he also left their two boys with her. I'm not positive, but it just seems like he kind of washed his hands of the family.
I understand people handle things differently with tragedy and everything, but to walk away from two children that you do have, I don't care if he is, you know, thinking that his wife is crazy. If anything, that's the reason not to leave his kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't much said about the boys and, you know, what they went through during all of this, but mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it was rough. They had just gotten a baby sister. 10 days later, she died in a fire, and then now their parents are separated. So
it's affected their lives as well.
Yeah. So he moved out, and Luce just had her boys for a few years. And then in 2004, Luce actually attended a birthday party for a family member of hers. And while she was at the party, she saw this little girl named Aaliyah, who she said looked very, very similar to her. She had her features, and she also mentioned that she had this dimple on one of her cheeks that looked just like her son's dimple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she was very, very, very convinced, and after a little bit at the party, she figured out who the mother was, and it was Carolyn.
The one that was at the house with her?
Pedro was fixing her brakes. So it was Carolyn there, and all the pieces just started falling together for her, and she was just like, that is my daughter.
Right.
So she collected a hair sample from the little girl, and she told her that she had gum in her hair, and she just yanked out a few pieces of hair and folded them in a napkin, put them in a bag. She left not long after that. She tried to go get DNA testing done on the hairs, but since they didn't really have probable cause to do it, they said that they couldn't do it without Carolyn's consent or her knowledge. And everybody just sent her away because they just couldn't do it without a court order. And, you know, she just became desperate again because, again, nobody was helping her. And she decided to make an appointment with Angel Cruz, who was the state representative for Pennsylvania at the time. And they said that they had an hour or more long meeting. And the whole time, he wasn't sure about it. He wasn't sure about her. He kind of thought she was a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But after hearing what she had to say and then going and reading about the case himself, he decided to take it to the DA's office. After they read the case and, like, going back and forth about the details that were in it, there were just so many things that didn't make sense.
Right.
So they decided to look up Carolyn's record.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually found out a year before the fire at Luis and Pedro's house in 1996, Carolyn had been arrested for embezzlement and arson at her previous job. And
that's not suspicious at all.
They actually said that, what did they say? I think she got like 2 months
mm-hmm.
in jail or something.
That's
and then
it.
Was released. Mm-hmm. She had 2 months in community service that she did, and she was released.
That's strange.
That wasn't
usually,
much at all.
Usually,
well, it's arson.
More
I feel
of
like,
a sentence than that.
Yeah, I feel like it should be much more.
Yeah, and embezzlement, too, with it.
Yeah. So with that information that she was involved in an arson case, they decided to get a court order because it wasn't a probable cause for a DNA test.
Mm-hmm.
They went and got Carolyn and Aaliyah's samples. And again, I'm not positive if this was like true, but in the movie, Carolyn had like sprayed something in Aaliyah's mouth before they took the DNA test. But I don't know, that was just a strange detail that I was curious. They never really said in the movie what it was, but she did spray something in her mouth. It was that, like, was supposed to affect the DNA test.
Mm-hmm.
So after they got the tests back, Carolyn was arrested because it came back Luce was Aaliyah's biological mother. So Carolyn was arrested and Aaliyah was brought to the social work center, and they gave her a little bit of time because they assumed that, like, this was such a traumatic event. She had been living with her mom for years, and now she was being taken away and told that somebody else was her mother.
How old was she at this point?
She was about 5 or 6.
Okay.
Wow.
So,
more than old enough to know what was going on.
Oh, yeah. She was very aware. And, you know, they assumed that it was going to be this huge transition for her, that it was going to be hard, and she was going to have to go through a bunch of counseling and everything. But once she and Luce actually met, it was just an automatic love. Like, they were happy to have each other. And the thing was that Aaliyah, since she was raised by Carolyn, she was raised to speak English. Mm-hmm. And Luce didn't really speak much English. She spoke mainly Spanish. So that was a big obstacle for them trying to get past that. But Aaliyah went into the family perfect. And she loved being there with them. And she loved Luce a lot. So a lot of people who knew Carolyn, and when they figured out she got arrested, they were all super shocked. They said that she was a wonderful mother to Aaliyah. And they were also confused about the fact that she stole a child because she already had 3 of her own. And one of them was a girl. So nobody was really like sure of why she did that. Carolyn actually did try to say in court that Pedro helped her taking Delamar. And he denies all of that, but she said that he didn't want her.
Apparently he didn't want anybody if he left them all.
Yeah. I don't think he had anything to do with it. I just think he didn't handle the situation well. Mm-hmm. And by leaving, that was just his way of handling it. But I don't think he was involved, but she tried to say that he was. And her lawyer also tried to claim insanity for her. But the judge that was on the case basically just said that she was not insane. She was just manipulative.
Right.
So she was given 9 to 30 years in prison for arson, attempted murder, and kidnapping. And later on, some information came out that Carolyn's boyfriend, that she had claimed to be pregnant before, like before any of this happened, she had told him that she was pregnant with their baby and that like they needed to get back together and blah, blah, blah. But he never really believed her. So when she claimed all of this being pregnant and everything, and then she came back with a baby, nobody really questioned her. Everybody was like, oh, she was pregnant. And then, the people who were involved in the case, the firefighters, the investigators, the officers, everybody who was involved in the case in 1997 when it happened, they were just all called lazy because they didn't do the correct investigation. And it was found out that the ashes that they found and that they said was Delamar was actually like dried wool, which can very well be mistaken for human remains, but only if it's burned at like 1,000 degrees or more. And the people reinvestigating this case said they should have known that the fire could not have reached 1,000 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a house fire that went on for 15 minutes. Like if it was a fire that went on for like an hour, yes, it could have reached 1,000 degrees, but they should have known that it did not reach 1,000 degrees. And also some cremation experts came out to say that just because the fire wasn't hot enough to completely incinerate an adult or even a baby, they should have found some kind of bone fragment remains mm-hmm. within the ashes. But there was nothing.
What about teeth? I didn't think teeth burned.
Yeah, so they should have found something.
But even if she was a baby, they have teeth already. They just haven't come out yet.
Mm-hmm. That's why they said they should have found some kind of like right. something other than ashes. So they were all kind of shamed for that case.
Good.
And they were, I don't think anybody, I mean, I don't know. It was only 5 years after the incident, so they could have all been working. I don't know if anybody got punished or anything, but the last piece of information that I found was that Carolyn was granted parole in 2013. So I don't know what kind of lawyer she has, but she must have a really
good one. She must have a good one. And I wonder if there was any contact or...
Probably not. I mean, I would think that they would get a restraining order at least.
I would hope so.
Yeah, but you know restraining orders don't work. They only work as good as the people who are supposed to enforce them enforce them.
She can't be obsessed with somebody else's child. She had 3 of her own. What are you going
to
do?
I wonder what happened to those kids.
I have no... There really was not a lot of information about this case. Like, a lot of the information that I found was information about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see anything about, like, how Luce and Aaliyah are doing?
There's not really information about, like, them specifically. They went to, like, the whole premiere and everything for the movie that came out about the case. But that was not long after they were reunited.
Uh-huh.
Somebody said that they think that they came across Aaliyah's or Delamar's social media account and said that she is possibly writing a book currently about her experiences.
Does she go by Delamar now? What I read was that Luce kept her name as Aaliyah because that's the name she grew up.
That's really sad that somebody would do that to somebody. But you know what? This is why you've got to listen to moms and their instincts.
Because if I was a mom and my baby was in a room with fire, I would do absolutely everything I could to get to her crib. I mean, even if I got burned to shit, I would go over there.
Especially if I knew that there was a window open, I would be like, all right, swipe the baby, go out the window.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't just go, oh, I can't get it in there.
Yeah. That wouldn't have been something that any of us would have walked away from.
Yeah.
If she had actually seen a baby in there. But if, like she said, she walked in and there was no baby.
That makes sense why she was okay going downstairs.
Yeah. I know it was still stressful because, I mean, you can think that you don't see anything and then you go outside and you think, oh my God, what if I left her? And I mean, somebody else goes in.
But I feel like she would have heard the baby crying too.
He reported hearing baby cries. But
she could have been on the farm or the property still.
Yeah. I'm not sure when exactly Carolyn got her out. Like, I don't know. If, I mean, she had to have gotten her out before because Carolyn went outside with the boys. So, I mean, she got her out, started the fire, and then somehow, like, Luce didn't see her coming out with the baby or hear the baby coming out. I really don't know exactly how it played out.
Yeah.
But it was
that just, seems like she did have to have someone.
Right. She
help her.
Had to have had somebody help her with, at least with the baby.
I don't know.
That's interesting.
That was a good story, though.
I'm glad that they got reunited.
I am, too.
I'm glad it was a good transition for them, too.
Yeah.
I know the language barrier had to suck, though.
Yeah, but their little souls recognized each other.
Yeah. Obviously, I didn't see their real reuniting or whatever, but in the movie, it was just kind of like a, like, I don't know. She wasn't really like, I'm your new mom. She was just kind of like admiring her.
That's sweet.
Well, I'm glad they ended up together. If nothing else, at least that part worked out.
I'll kill somebody if they try to take my baby. Kill somebody.
You know, it was interesting. They,
and you know what? I'll smile in my mugshot.
Exactly. I'll be like, peace, y'all. They did this question to moms. They did like northern and southern moms, and they asked the northern moms, would you kill for your child?
Oh, I think I saw that.
And all the northern moms were like, no, I would never kill for my child. You know, I could never do that.
All the southern moms are
all the southern moms like, not only will I kill them, I will bury them.
I will skin them.
I will take down their family if needed, and I will smile as I do it. And if I can't do it on my own, I'll call some of my other southern moms and we'll all take them down. I just don't understand the understanding of that. You know, if this is your baby, this is your child. Well, that was a really good story, Morgan.
Thank you.
And again, I'm glad she has her baby.
Yeah.
It's a good ending.
And she gained two brothers.
Yeah. I mean, she got a whole family.
She didn't go home or go from having three siblings to nothing.
Yeah.
But she got two siblings that really wanted her.
Well, good for Luz for fighting.
I know.
And not giving up.
Always listen to your gut, moms. All right. So what is your story about, Megan?
Okay. So this week we're going to go to South Korea. And I'm going to talk about a lady who was the first serial killer, female serial killer in South Korea. And she didn't even touch a single one of her victims.
Wait a minute. She's a serial killer, but she never killed anybody physically herself?
She doesn't like the germs.
She didn't touch them. Kim Sun-ja was the first female serial killer in South Korea. And she's often referred to as Lady Eom. So her first victim was her good friend, Kim Gi-hwan. And on October 31st, 1986, these two girls went out and had a girls' day. They went to the bathhouse, relaxed in the baths, hung out in the saunas. And after coming out of the baths, Lady Eom offered her friend a drink, saying, you know, this is a super healthy drink. It's going to make you feel great. Why don't you drink it? And her friend, without hesitation, because that was her friend, took the drink. And shortly after, She began experiencing severe cramps, difficulty breathing, and she soon had a seizure-like episode. It started foaming out the mouth and passed out. When she was brought to the hospital, she was declared dead.
And now, that's the kind of friends you don't need to have.
The only evidence that they could find with this, because everyone was like, I don't understand how she died. Like, she was so healthy. She was young-ish.
How old were they?
They were in their, like, late 30s, like, early 40s. The only evidence that they could find was that her necklace and her ring had been stolen. But other than that, nothing else seemed out of the ordinary. And in Korea, autopsies are not commonly performed because many of the people in South Korea see it as like a disrespectful thing because it's like killing their loved ones for a second time. So due to this, an autopsy was never done and her death was just never officially determined. Then on April 4th, 1987, Kim asked 50-year-old Jeon Sunja, who was a creditor of hers, to ride the bus with her so she could go get money. And she borrowed 7 million won, which is the currency in Korea, and the two women boarded the bus. Lady Yeon once again offered her friend a drink, claiming that it was really healthy for her and that she would start feeling wonderful afterwards. Again, her friend took the drink without hesitation and drank it. And shortly after, she started experiencing severe cramps. As she was complaining about the severe cramps, Lady Yeom was like, oh, it's okay. You know, the drink is working. Just keep drinking it. You'll feel better once you finish it.
Okay, so moral of the story is don't ever drink anything that anybody says is healthy and good for you.
So Jeon Sunja listened to her friend and continued to drink the drink. And then shortly after, she fell and was declared dead at the hospital. Again, no autopsy was allowed with her. And on February 10th, 1988, Lady Yeom suggested again to another one of her creditors, Kim Sunja, to go to a coffee shop with her so that she could receive money from someone that owed her money. Lady Yeom borrowed 1.2 million from Kim Sunja before they agreed to go. While they waited, they had some coffee, they hung out, talked, and the debtor never showed up. So they ended up just leaving, and she, again, received a drink from her trusted friend. And without hesitation, she drank it. On the way home, though, she started to vomit in the taxi, and Lady Yeom was like, oh, you'll feel better. Just keep drinking it. It's just the way the drink is. But Sunja was getting very suspicious of Lady Yeom and ignored her suggestions. So she was one of the only victims to escape the plans of Lady Yeom. It's reported that later Lady Yeom visited Sunja at her house to check on her to see how she was doing and repaid her the money she owed.
Because she's the only one that she couldn't get rid of.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay, note to myself, I'm not drinking anything y'all tell me is healthy for me.
I'm not loaning anybody I don't know money.
I think both of those are probably good suggestions.
On March 27th, 1988, Lady Yom's father came back to town. He had been out, you know, visiting family. He was 73 years old, Kim Jong-chun, and they were on the bus riding back home, and she, too, hands him a drink. Again, doctors were not able to save him. Again, no autopsy was performed.
They should start performing autopsies around this woman. I mean,
and it's also important to note that he was a creditor for her as well. And then on April 29th, 1988, Lady Yeom poisoned a drink that her 46-year-old younger sister was handed while they were waiting for the bus. Like her other victims, she borrowed $10 million won from her younger sister. And while her sister was being carried away to the hospital, she was able to get away with her handbag and jewelry, and her sister succumbed to her poisoning.
Her special healthy drink.
Yeah, her special healthy drink. Again, August 8th, 1988, Kim met her 46-year-old cousin, Son Si-won, at a coffee shop. She proceeded to borrow 484 million won under the guise that she needed it for the deposit that is required to buy her house. After borrowing the money, she gave her cousin the poison drink, and she collapsed while riding the bus and again died on arrival to the hospital.
Damn, she would just be knocking them out.
Right? police started to get suspicious.
Now they get suspicious.
Yeah.
I mean, she's had like 102 victims by now.
All of these people were dying of unknown causes because no autopsies were performed. And the only common denominator was Lady E. Nam. So they decided to go to her house. And when they came and told her what they were, you know, what the warrant was for to search, she was sitting there just like profusely claiming that she had nothing to do with it, that, you know, it's just bad coincidences. Even still, the cops went in and checked out her house, and they found a newspaper in her bathroom that had a small hole in it. And inside the hole, they found a clump of cyanide that she had bought from her nephew who worked at a chemical company. But she told him that she was getting it to catch pheasants. So the whole time, she had been putting lethal doses of cyanide in everyone's drinks, which at this time, like, cyanide was kind of easy to get because that was a common suicide help. Like, that's what people used commonly.
Uh-huh.
In Korea.
Why was it easy to get then?
Because it was Korea.
Yeah. Once it became an issue, they were like, okay, let's not make this common to get.
Let's not put this as over the counter anymore.
So she had easy access to it. And then once she was brought to trial, she still continued to deny any accusations, but she was ultimately sentenced to death by the Supreme Court. In December 30th, 1997, she was executed at the Daejeon prison, along with 22 other prisoners. And this would actually be the last executions that took place in South Korea.
That's shocking.
Yeah, I know.
So how many people did she kill altogether?
Supposedly six.
Did they ever, like, exhume any of the other bodies to see if they had been killed with cyanide, too?
Yeah, they did. It didn't say which ones, because Asian cultures, they're very, like,
right,
tight with their media. So they did take four bodies and do autopsies on them, and three of the four came back with cyanide in their system.
Mm.
Lovely. No, but why? Just to get rid of the people she owed money to?
To get rid of the people she owed money to get more money.
So this was all for her gambling addiction.
Okay. Yeah. So solid. She was probably taking their money and their jewelry and selling all that and taking all that money and getting further in debt. And then she was like, oh, okay, well, I owe $1 million here, so I'll just go borrow $1 million from that person and they're dead. I don't have to worry about paying it back.
So she was like, she was like a reverse loan shark. She was a debt shark.
A death shark.
You know, you loaned her money, she'd kill you. So she wouldn't have to pay it back, but she would also make sure she could get more money out of you before she killed you.
Yeah. She had a plan.
Death it.
Nice.
That is psycho.
I know.
You know what worries me the most about this podcast? I talk about hauntings. I talk about things that have already happened. These people are already dead. Y'all get plans. You get ideas. You get...
For what? Are we going to go out and murder people?
I don't think so, but, you know, I don't want any of it practiced on me.
It's not... I'm not that psycho.
She thinks that we're murderers. Who's the psycho now?
We can't even kill a bug.
This is true.
What makes you think we're going to kill someone?
I don't think you're going to kill
somebody.
We
scream at bugs. And push each other in front.
I don't think y'all would ever do anything to me. I don't. I really don't believe that.
Sure.
But no, I do.
You do believe it.
No, I don't believe it. Uh-huh. Okay. I don't believe it. But I tell you what, with all this research and stuff y'all do, you could write a book on how to do murder and get away with it.
These people in this world are insane.
They are. It really makes you wonder if the person that you're standing beside of in a line...
Oh, I know.
Has ever killed anybody.
It makes me paranoid. It really does.
And I think everybody that I run into, every man at least, is trying to steal my child. Every single one.
I totally understand that. I used to think the same thing. But it really makes you wonder how many times you have come close to standing next to a murderer or...
Somebody who hasn't gotten caught.
Yes.
I'm also just like, I want to say fascinated, but I don't feel like that's the correct term.
I mean, I am fascinated by it because, like, as a normal person who does not want to kill people,
I would never think of these things.
Yeah.
No.
Like the one that I did a while ago about Samantha Koenig. Mm-hmm. Like, bro had kill kits all over the country.
Yeah.
Like, who thinks of that?
No.
Well, when I was looking at stuff for Lady Eom, I found another case that I couldn't find a ton of information on, which is kind of disappointing. I really wanted to do it. But this lady killed two of her husbands and put them in kimchi containers. She was going to make human kimchi.
Oh, gross.
I wish I could have found more, but a lot of it was in Korean, and I obviously do not speak Korean or read Korean. But like, stuff like that just blows my mind. Like, how do people get ideas like this?
Didn't we do one where somebody was pickling people?
Yeah.
In the basement?
No, the one that you did, she made a stew.
Well, I remember that was one of them, but it was Bela Kish who had people.
Oh, the barrels?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically pickling.
Well, he had so many barrels, didn't he?
He did.
Thank God.
I mean, no offense to any of the victims, but I find them fascinating with the cannibalistic cases.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that at all.
Issa Sagawa.
Yes. I mean, purposely cannibalism. You know, if you're in a situation where it's you're the only one left, and if you don't, you know, eat that thigh, then you're going to die. Eat a thigh, don't die.
I don't know that I could even do that.
I don't know that I could either.
Like, I feel like I would just vomit it up and
I think I would kill too. Myself I think I would just have to go, okay, well, maybe I can find some bark around here or some berries or something to eat. But I still don't think, even in a situation like that, I would be able to do that.
Like, it blows my mind to even get a glimpse into how these people think.
I know. I mean, it's a whole nother level of thinking,
mm-hmm.
and not one that I ever want to be on. So no. I'm grateful. We'll do the stories, but I'm glad I'm not going to be one of them. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in and for listening. We hope you've enjoyed all of our stories this week, because obviously, we enjoy looking them up and telling you about them, no matter how bizarre, macabre they might be. As always, you can find us on social media. And if you have anything that you'd like to see us cover, please reach out to us and let us know. We'll be glad to do it for you. And thank you for listening. And may all your hauntings be happy.
Bye.
Bye.